Hey, everybody, and welcome to Learning from Smart People. I am your host, Rob Oliver, and it is my privilege to have you join me yet again for another episode of Learning from Smart People. Listen, if you are a returning listener, you've listened to all of the episodes, I want to say thank you. If you are brand new, I want to say welcome. You are here. You are going to learn something today from a very smart person, and do me a favor, if you're new, go ahead and subscribe to the channel. Make sure that you don't miss any of our upcoming episodes. It's a place where all of us are together learning from smart people. So my smart person today is Rhonda Williams. She is known as the stress-free leader. Rhonda, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Rob. It's great to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So in this environment where we're living, stress is all around us. And is stress something that our environment causes or that we cause ourselves? Or like, where does stress come from, if that makes any sense?
It does. And it's a great question. So the answer is yes, right? Yes to both of those things. Our stress can be triggered by the external environment. And we also do a lot of manufacturing of our own stress. So particularly when I speak about being a stress-free leader, that is not the absence of stress, but it is you becoming what I like to think of as a stress ninja, right? You are skillfully and masterfully navigating, managing, and handling anything that comes your way without really being thrown too far off kilter.
Okay. Because I think that what you're talking about is right. Because sometimes stress, I see it almost as a vicious circle where you experience something that causes you some anxiety, some stress, and it becomes just this self-perpetuating thing where that you're worried about it, and then you're worried about the fact that you're worried about it, and then you're worried about the fact that you're worried about the fact that, and it just kind of spirals out of control. And yet I just had a guest on recently, and they were talking about the fact that you can't give from an empty bucket. And so when you are stressed out, you're not feeling nourished and full yourself. And in that way, you can't give to others, which makes you an ineffective leader. So what are your tips then for becoming a stress ninja? Because I love the term. Can you help us? I mean, I'm assuming that it's more than like getting nunchucks and getting all dressed up in black.
It is definitely more than that. You know, it's so interesting. And just to pick up on something that you said there, all of these factors are happening outside of us. But when we look at the external environment, you know, we really get to decide how that affects us. For instance, there are times when I drive and there's a lot of traffic. It doesn't bother me in the slightest. My son could be driving three cars behind me and he could be making lots of faces and gestures and doing all kinds of things because he's stressed out about, right? So it's not really the event itself. It's really about how we pick it up, how we take it in, we internalize it, and we process it. So it's particularly when it comes to leaders, right? I love that quote. You cannot serve from an empty bucket or an empty vessel. You have to be aware of you. So one of my first tips and one of my first, frankly, challenges for leaders is to be self-aware enough to know where you are in the process. We have a tendency to dismiss our stress, yet it takes a toll on us. So while you are pretending that it's not there and it's not a big deal, everyone else is going, oh my goodness, here she comes. Let me cross to the other room, right? Let me walk down the other side of the hall because other people can see it and feel it. So we need to understand what that looks like for us, what it is for us, what our triggers are. If we can do those things, then leaders have an opportunity to get out ahead of the stress. And that is really what I advocate.
Yeah. Okay. So you have created this concept of an R-soul. Can you tell me what is an R-soul?
Yes, absolutely. So I consider myself an R-soul, which is a recovering stressed out leader. Right. So just to give you a little bit of a background, I'm a registered nurse by background. And so I spent a lot of time in the hospital setting and as a registered nurse working and caring for my patients, and then began to sort of ascend in my career, got to the position of chief nursing officer and hospital CEO. And as you can imagine, at those levels, there is quite a bit of stress. I wish I knew what an RSO was at that point. But when some things happened and I knew I absolutely needed to make a major change in my life, right? I had some crises happen both professionally and personally. I lost my job and from an organization I worked at for nearly 18 years. I realized that the person I was married to wasn't the person I needed to stay married to forever. We had been married for 25 years. So I sort of had these colliding events happening in my life. And when that happened, I realized that I had to regain control. I felt like I was spiraling a bit, right? And I felt like I was becoming a victim of my circumstances. And I recall having this talk with myself where I said, okay, self, who are you going to be? Right? You have to decide who you're going to be. Are you going to let these situations define who you are, or are you going to take control? And at that moment, I decided I was going to take control. I changed everything in my life, decided it was time to get a new attitude. I reinvented myself, recreated my career, which really started the path of bringing me here to speaking with you today. The path of really coaching leaders to also understand they too can become an RSOL. You have the opportunity to decide that you are going to not accept the standard or what people say is expected levels of stress. As a leader, that's a fallacy. Leaders don't necessarily have to carry those stressful burdens all themselves all the time. That is not my definition of leadership. And the leaders that I coach, that's what I help them with.
Okay, so talk to me then about what is your definition of leadership? Because you told us what is not your definition. What is the definition for you?
Yeah, so my definition of leadership is someone who can inspire, who can motivate, who can, what's the term I'm looking for, who can develop others around them in a way that they get results, right? So as a leader, it is not up to you to get all of the results. Your job, depending on that team that you're working with, is to lift those others up so that they can effectively become a part of the solution. And if you know, there's a phrase that goes something like this. If you are walking as a leader and you look behind you and no one is following, you're not leading, you're simply taking a walk. And so it's important for leaders to know they really are empowered to build others up around them and to leverage the team around them to get the results. And I will also say, one of the reasons that I find prevalent in the stress of my leaders that I work with is the fact that they're not always doing that. They're feeling this sense of burden that they have to carry, that they have to have the answers, they have to do it all, they have to be on 24/7. And when we create the shift for them in their life to know that is absolutely not the case, then they can move to becoming an RSOL. Then they can join me in the Stress-Free Leader Club.
Right. So there are way too many souls out there, stressed out leaders, right? It's not until you add the R that it makes such a difference. I think about the idea that, I mean, I don't know who was it that invented trickle-down economics, right? But I think that there's trickle-down stress too, because when you're on your way into the office and you already mentioned you're sitting in traffic and it's like, okay, traffic is a little bit worse today than it usually is, and I'm not going to be there when I want to be there. And you are feeling the stress. And then when you get into the office, that stress kind of flows down to everybody that you're coming in contact with, and you're creating a higher stress level for them, and it becomes a negative environment. And when you're talking about your definition of leadership, where your leaders are encouraging people, inspiring people, motivating people, and helping people to accomplish what they're capable of, when you're stressed out and the stress is bleeding out into the people that you're leading, it's actually inhibiting them from achieving what is possible for them. Is that a factual statement, do you think?
I think it is. And in fact, it's sort of, you're creating this double negative environment. Not only are you not able to operate as your best self as a leader, because who can when you're under that tremendous amount of stress consistently, which is one of the reasons why I encourage my leaders to reject that, to change that belief pattern that this means you are a leader, that this means you are a good leader or an effective leader because you can take all of this stress. That's not what it means. And in fact, that stress is not good for you. You know, I put on my clinical hat and I understand the role that stress plays in our bodies, the chemical response, and then sometimes the physiological response that comes with that. So it is very important to know, as a leader, when you are in that position of stress, you can't give, you can't serve effectively, and then you could potentially be inhibiting the very thing that you desire, which is the productivity and the results of your team, because they can't be their best selves. They can't lead from that place of authenticity. They can't be most creative. They can't problem solve. And they can't, what I call sort of becoming solutionist, right? They can't do any of those things when you are in stress, because what happens with stress? You go into self-preservation mode. Right. Well, if you're preserving yourself, you're not worried about being creative. All you're worried about is surviving.
Yeah, you're not nurturing others. You're not building them up. You're just... The focus becomes all internal. I want to go back to something you said earlier, and you were talking about the things that happen around us. And I'm not sure exactly how you phrased it, but it was basically the things that happen around us in our environment are neither good nor bad, right? And it's all in how we handle them. Can you tell me more about that? Because so many of us, we look and we say, okay, this thing happened and this is a bad thing that happened. And now I'm bummed out about this bad thing that happened. But how do you take away the value statements that go with the things that are happening in your environment?
Yeah, so really great question. When I look and when I break down stress and the causative factors of stress, stress really isn't caused by anything that happens external to you, unless you're talking about a physiological stress or a chemical stress or you are in a motor vehicle accident, something like that, right? That physical stress is one thing. Right. Most of our other stressors are generated by the way that we think, that how we're processing. That becomes habitual for us. Oftentimes, we don't even realize that when X happens, our response is Y. We don't think about it, but guess what? Our body knows it. Our brain knows it. They have this down. They have it memorized. So I know that if I'm a person that hates traffic and I hate to be late and I am sitting in traffic and I'm going to be late, my body and my brain goes, oh, I know what to do with this. We're going to get angry and we're going to get grumpy and we're going to do these things. How does it know? Because you've trained it to do that. Mm. So the way that stress really continues to manifest is the way that you think about it and you process it. So one of the huge factors involved in the work that I do with leaders is using emotional intelligence to help leaders change their thinking, right? Shift to a different mindset so that they can process these external events differently, so it doesn't lead to the amount of stress. So yesterday was a great example. I'm giving a presentation and the video, which is an important part of this presentation, is not working. And so at that moment, I had a choice. I could have, you know, really sort of crumbled, got really frustrated and fumbled around. In my head, I did that for a moment because emotional intelligence isn't the absence of emotion, right? It's not that I'm not going to feel that moment, but it's really what I do then. What I decided to do was, okay, this kind of sucks, but what can I do at this moment? And so I shifted gears, continued to engage with the group, got things moving again, and we ended up having a pretty decent experience through the entire thing. And I even got a few compliments at the end. Someone sent me a note that said, man, you were grace under fire or whatever. Right. And I was just thinking, you know what? Because it truly is how we train ourselves, what our triggers are, how we react to things around us. Those are your stress drivers through using techniques like emotional intelligence, you can really help to manage those. It's a skill set that you really can develop and improve to help you reduce your level of stress.
Right. I'm just thinking about the irony of it where, you know, you're teaching people how to be stress-free leaders, and here you are, and you're under a tremendous amount of stress yourself based on what's going on in the experience. And what a great way to show people, like, okay, this isn't just theoretical talk, and I'm not just up here, you know, spouting off kind of the thing that, you know, I'm not just academic about this. This is practical and real, and it has real world impact, which is phenomenal. So as you're sharing this with people, can you talk to me a little bit of some of the examples of folks that you may have worked with and been able to see the kind of changes in their environments, changes in their lives, and it changes that to the way that they lead. Can you share some examples like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I worked with a young lady who was in a IT department and really wanted to move up the ranks in that IT department. But there were some concerns that she was becoming really emotional, having these outbursts, becoming tearful in meetings, you know, sort of snapping at folks. And so I did quite a few things. Number one, you talk with the team around her to see what they were perceiving, what was happening, spent quite a bit of time working with her. And, you know, after working with me for some time, what we really understood was she was feeling unappreciated. And this is where I connect the dots to self-awareness, because as you are lashing out, what's causing that, right? What's underneath? Typically, what you are doing or seeing on the surface is only a mask for what's really happening underneath. So as we worked together and we got underneath and we started to be able to open up that dialogue, we focused on a couple of things. Number one, dealing with her own feelings of insecurity, because no one can really make you feel insecure. That's something that we develop over time. And so we worked on that. We also worked on building relationships with some of her team members and getting her in different settings where people could really get to know her personally and see her in action. And then the third piece of that was in meetings, really having her step forward and bring her full brilliance to the table, leaving all of the other stuff aside. Right. So a while after working with me, she ended up getting promoted, actually, and was super excited because that's really what she wanted.
Sure.
But, you know, at the end of the day, there's a phrase that I like to use, and a lot of people like to throw things at me. So please don't throw anything at me if you're out there listening right now. But the phrase is hashtag it's always you. Okay. Hashtag it's always you. And that is not a blaming statement, a shaming statement. It is actually, in my view, a statement of empowerment. Because what it means to me is you are the one with the opportunity to take control. You can react or you can respond. You can choose that you're going to speak up in a calm, assertive manner, or you can choose to be aggressive or fall apart, right? You can decide that you are going to call out someone that's disrespectful to you, but to do that in a way that's genuine and that's a teachable moment, as opposed to a different way that's perceived as confrontational and mean, right? You are the one that gets to motivate and inspire your team. Hashtag, it's always you. Once people take ownership of that, then it becomes really amazing what they can do.
Yeah, I was thinking of it. You've put it that way. I was thinking of it from the perspective of you can only change you, right? Yeah. And that, so when it comes down to it's always you. You can wish for other people to change. You can wish for the environment to change. You can wish for things to be different, but ultimately, the only thing that you can truly change is yourself. You can change the way you think. You can change the way you react. You can change the way that you conduct yourself. Mm-hmm. But that's all that you have control of. I love that. And just to go back to when you were talking about working with this person from the IT department, It's crazy to me because when I was a kid, my mom taught me something like small problem is a big problem struggling to get out. And inside every big problem is a small problem struggling to get out. And it seems like that was what was going on with her. Is that how you would sum it up?
It is. I love that. I love that, you know, inside every big problem is a small problem. And I find that to be true very often. But when we are the next frame saying then that comes to mind for me is you can't see the picture if you're in the frame. And that's often what happens with us in life, with the leaders that I work with. You're so close that you're only now you've narrowed your vantage point to only see your perspective, but that's just a small piece of the puzzle. There's so much more happening. And so it's really important, I think, that we recognize our own limitations. You know, self-awareness from an emotional intelligence perspective, I talk to leaders about self-awareness and they say, oh yeah, I know myself. And I say, yeah, okay, awesome. That's a great start. But how are you impacting others? Are you clear on your impact to others around you, to the team, to the mission, to the goal? I had some personal experiences as a leader where, yes, I knew myself, but I was unaware of the impact that I was having on the team. Mm. I had lost focus, lost sight under everything happening and in the midst of all the busyness. I lost sight of my, you know, the way others were receiving me and then how I was impacting the team. So self-awareness is two parts. Knowing yourself, but it's also knowing how you're showing up for others.
Yeah, but okay, and it's the old Joe Harry window, right? In which there are things that others know about you that you don't know about yourself. So, you know, yeah, you have an awareness of yourself. You know that there are some things that you know that other people do know, some things that you know that other people's don't. Other people, singular, don't. but there's also things that and what you need to be able to do is to be open to feedback, to listen, and to have that self-awareness, as you said, to be able to take a step back and see, okay, what is the impact of what I'm doing on the people around me? I love that idea. So can you give some tips for increasing that self-awareness? Because sometimes we are in the frame. How do we get ourselves out of the frame? How do we take that step back and and increase our own understanding of what we're doing and the impact that we're having?
Absolutely. So for self-awareness, a couple of things I recommend are number one, being mindful and paying attention to yourself. How often do you really pay attention to yourself? Do you pay attention to the thoughts going through your head? If you're just sitting down on the sofa, what's going through your head, right? It's about paying attention to yourself and recognizing the thoughts that you have that serve you and the thoughts that you have that probably don't serve you all that well. You know, I like to say just because it's going through your head doesn't make it true. And so which of those thoughts are serving you and which ones are not? I also recommend journaling. And what I ask is for the leaders to periodically during the day, just stop for a moment and just jot down, how are you feeling? What are you thinking? Right? Because sometimes if you're in a fast moving environment, it's really hard to just stop and pay attention. Sure. But sometimes you can do that a couple times a day. You can do it at the end of the day, do some journaling. I also recommend some breathing and some meditation, right? Really bringing yourself back to the present state where you're mindful and paying attention. In terms of your impact on other people, I recommend asking, okay, right? I mean, the best way to know how you're affecting other people is to, number one, pay attention. When you walk into the room, what's the response? Are people as open with you as you think they are? Are people doing things because you're the leader, or are they doing them because you're inspiring them to greatness, right? There's different factors to pay attention to as a leader. So you want to observe that feedback, listen to what is being said, not listen to give your rebuttal, but listen to what's really being said and what's being said both verbally and non-verbally, because people speak always.
Yes.
And if you show up, like for instance, if I show up and I walk into the room and everything gets quiet, they're speaking. Right, they were speaking, and I need to pay attention to that. And then finally, again, as I started with, in terms of your impact on others, ask the questions. Don't be afraid to say, "Hey, I have a 3-question survey. I'm going to give you. It's going to be anonymous. I don't need to know your name. Just getting some feedback because I know that as a leader, I'm on a journey to improve myself so that I can serve all of you better." How cool is that for your leader to say to you, "Hey, I want your feedback. I know I'm not perfect." And then it's like in the jury trial, right? Don't ask a question that you can't or don't want the answer to. Because once people give you their feedback, now it's up to you to own that and to do something with it.
Yeah, and so many times listening, I think, is such a lost art, because a lot of times when we ask a question and then we begin to hear what the other person is saying, we either, as soon as they start talking, we begin to think, okay, how am I going to respond to this? Or, you know, when it's feedback, sometimes if it's negative feedback, we're thinking, how do I defend myself? And you don't actually listen to what the other person is saying. You're thinking about yourself. And this is actually, I think, part of exactly what you're talking about, where your focus becomes internal instead of external. Your focus is on you instead of the people around you. And the only way, it's kind of like looking in a mirror and then criticizing the mirror and saying that, you know, I don't like what I see, and the problem is the mirror. It's not, you know, it's not the fact that I've put on a couple pounds or whatever. You know, I've got a lot more gray hair than I used to. Does that make sense to you at all?
It does. It makes perfect sense to me. And I think it's spot on. You know, it's not the mirror, right? You know, what's standing in front of the mirror? And so I think it's so important for us listening. I agree with you. It is a lost art. We have trained ourselves, but whether it's us individually, society as a whole, just the rapid pace that we do things, to always be ready to respond. And then that causes us to sometimes really not listen, or at least not to hear.
Yeah. Cool. Rhonda, thank you so much for sharing today. This has been wonderful. If people are looking to get a hold of you, where can they find you on the web, or what's the easiest way to do that?
Absolutely. So they can visit my website, thestressfreeleader.net. It's thestressfreeleader.net. There's a free ebook on the site also, and it talks about stress, being stressed out, and 5 types of stress leaders and how they show up. Because it's important to be able to know which one of those are you, because the solutions are different. And they can visit the website also if a listener just wants a little momentum boost, a little push to get themselves going. There's an opportunity to schedule a momentum boosting call for me there also.
Okay, beautiful. I will put all of that in the show notes and make sure that, you know, your people are taking advantage of that, and it'll work out well. So, it's time for 3 questions to establish your humanity. Are you ready for these, my friend?
All right, I'm ready.
Did you have a nickname when you were growing up?
Oh my gosh, what a question! All right, total transparency, that's my goal as a stress-free leader, right? Okay, so my nickname is Granny.
Okay, I've got, like, how did you get the nickname Granny from when you were little?
It's hilarious. So my mom, my parents, everyone around me said that I was just so grown up. I was always so adult. I was so smart, you know, and they just called me Granny, even though I was little. They were like, "Look how smart she is and how adult she is." So yeah, and it just kind of stuck all these years.
That is too funny. Okay, so in the evening, would you rather play a game, visit a relative, watch a movie, or read?
I'd rather watch a movie.
Okay.
I have become such a movie buff, and I love the Marvel movies and all of those. I am a sci-fi person, so I will look up any crazy new sci-fi movie and I will watch that.
There you go. You know what? You got to find your genre and enjoy it. So yeah, great. Last question for you. If you could only eat one meal for the rest of your life, that you're going to eat the same meal for dinner every night, what is that meal going to be?
Wow. Oh, you know what? I think it's going to be one meal. That's a tough one. I think it's going to have something with fried shrimp in it.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what the other side is going to be, but it's going to be some shrimp in there somewhere.
That works. Rhonda, thank you so much. I appreciate you being here today. To all my listeners, thank you as well for being here. I appreciate, hopefully the technical glitches don't make this too much of a problem, but we'll get there. Listen, you have helped me today by reminding me that sometimes we go through difficult experiences. It happens in the middle of the podcast with the stress-free leader, but we worked through it. You gave us great stuff. So thank you. Thank you to all my listeners. And I will remind you that when you stop learning, you stop living. Have a great day, everybody.